You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now we have an international segment with Connor Now.
Indeed, yes. So I'm talking.
What's going on?
I'm talking to a subject that's quite close to my heart because not a lot of people know. I am actually half Northern Irish, which is probably no surprise considering my name. If you see me, I'm incredibly ginger. So that kind of applies. We're going to talk about a record that Northern Ireland has set. They have 590 days without a government. That is the longest a democracy has gone without a government. We're also going to talk about the issues of sectarianism and identity that surround that. I'm going to put in a disclaimer before I start it, because the thing is going to describe itself, but the disclaimer is that, you know, this is going to be an impartial piece. I have my own background that I come from, which I make very well known in there, but it is going to be an impartial piece, and I just want to say that, you know, this isn't to advocate the violence or either side that has gone on there, and I would actually recommend to anyone, because I've heard up the RA and no surrender here and there around New Zealand, that shame on anyone who does that, because 3,700 people were murdered in that conflict, and this is meant not going to focus on that or advocate that or anything like that. What it's going to do is actually look at the facts in Northern Ireland. And if you want to have a constructive debate, please do. If you want to go and put forward sectarian propaganda, think again, please. Yes.
Or at least let's, talk about the facts and understand the history and the context
exactly.
That we're talking about.
Exactly.
All right.
Yes. Most people, when they picture Ireland, think of green rolling hills, clear blue lochs, friendly, witty, easygoing people, ready for a drink or an anecdote at the first chance they get. All of this is true. Ireland is full of natural beauty. The culture is rich, the Irish are on the whole very friendly people, and the social aspect is unparalleled. It's no surprise hordes of tourists flock to witness a unique corner of the world each year. But if I were to borrow a concept made famous by one of Ireland's great novelists, Oscar Wilde, if those traits represent Dorian Gray, the situation in Northern Ireland for many years has very much represented his mirror. This is a song called "The Sash My Father Wore," being played by a marching band on the 12th of July through Belfast. The Protestant Orange Men marched to celebrate King William of Orange's victory in the Williamite War of Ireland in 1690 that solidified the British monarchy as a Protestant institution rolling over Ireland. It's a song that historically precedes violence, conflict, and inflamed hatred. The parades often march past Catholic communities with people screaming anti-Catholic slogans like "Kill all Teagues," "Fuck the Pope," and much worse. This tradition did reach New Zealand. Streets in Auckland in 1842 rang to this tune. The old Auckland Orange Lodge still stands on the corner of Newton Road and Dundonald Street. And 1879 saw riots between Catholics and Protestants in Christchurch and Timaru. Nonetheless, in Northern Ireland, on the 12th of July 2018, it was all no different. Here is a sample of the riots that took place this year.
Here we go, look. Head down.
Come on, get him up! Get him up! Get him out of here! Get him out! Come on, get him back! Public order first, the others, please. Urgent. And one more officer down, they're unconscious. I'm starting to lose officers in the line. I'm soon going to affect my leader. Hold. Over.
2018 marks the 20th anniversary of the 1998 Good Friday Agreement that ended the Troubles and paved the way for a functioning devolved government between Unionist Protestants and Nationalist Catholics. But the last year and a half has shown just how tense that peace between the two sides is.
The DUP has hit out at Sinn Féin for what it calls the party's boycott of the Northern Ireland Assembly. The country's been without an administration for 590 days, surpassing Belgium's record for the longest peacetime period without a functioning government. Thousands took part in "We Deserve Better" rallies across the region. demanding discussions between politicians to resume. A deadlock began in January 2017 when the late Deputy First Minister Martin McGuinness resigned in protest over DUP leader Arlene Foster's role in a failed renewable energy scheme. A snap election was held that March, but the two parties have been unable to reach a power-sharing agreement since.
To break this down a little bit, I'm going to give you the background as to why power-sharing is needed in Northern Ireland to form a government and the conditions behind how it all came about. And the best way to explain the division is through the lens of sectarianism. Sectarianism is a merciless beast. It's tribal, it can be violent, it divides people, and like a hereditary disease, it lives on by being passed down, from father to son, from mother to daughter. The divide is essentially this. Those from Protestant backgrounds support Northern Ireland staying with the UK and have historically opposed the fight for an Irish independent state, on the basis that life for them is preferable under the rule of a Protestant monarch instead of a Catholic government. On the other side, those who are Catholic support a united Ireland on the basis of political and religious freedom. Sectarianism comes in many forms, explicit and implicit, and can survive generations. I'm going to use myself as an example to explain how it develops. I'm half English, half Northern Irish, meaning my father grew up a Northern Irish Protestant from Unionist family. Even though I've never lived there, and I've only ever visited family there on regular occasions, I'm going to explain the traits of my Irish identity that mark out which side of the fence I should stand on, according to the rules of Northern Irish sectarianism. This is the list that I've compiled. My family are from Bangor in County Down, the most unionist town in Northern Ireland. People from North County Down are generally marked as Protestant unionist. Same goes for County Antrim, parts of Belfast, and North County Derry, Londonderry. I grew up with Northern Irish football jerseys, not Republic of Ireland football jerseys. Catholics generally don't support Northern Ireland in football. I never heard Gaelic spoken, and I never saw it written unless I crossed the border. My family's community was exclusively English-speaking. Catholic communities tend to be bilingual. I never grew up with GAA sports, Gaelic football and hurling. The sports I grew up with were rugby and football. GAA sports in Catholic communities are very popular, by contrast. I grew up believing the Ulster banner was the flag of Northern Ireland. Catholic communities grew up believing the Irish tricolour is the flag of the land. In truth, there is no official flag besides the British Union flag. I was taught Northern Ireland and the Republic were separate countries. Catholics described Northern Ireland as occupied by British forces and really part of the Republic. And finally, I have attended an Orange Order parade on the 12th of July and watched an Irish tricolour burn on a bonfire the night before. This is something a Catholic would never do. Now, there are those unlike me or my relations who have involvement in the violence that takes the division a step further. But these traits that I mentioned, and the converse for those law-abiding, everyday Catholics, show how sectarianism is, in a sense, an inescapable part of the Northern Irish identity. The Troubles most famously marked the peak of this divide, a protracted paramilitary conflict that left 3,700 dead over 30 years from 1969 to 1998. It was essentially an extension of the Irish Civil War of the 1920s. The Protestant majority in the North held power, and tensions between the communities rose to the point where paramilitaries like the IRA took up arms with Libyan-supplied weapons, and the UDA and UVF responded similarly. For every IRA bombing or assassination, the UVF or UDA would match it. Physical peace walls and divisions were erected between Catholic and Protestant communities that still stand today. But most importantly, the trauma inflicted on children and adults alike, who knew people who were shot, tortured, or abducted by paramilitaries, both Catholic and Protestant, has meant Northern Ireland has the highest suicide rate in the UK. Finally, in 1998, the horror of the Omagh bombing that killed 29 people and injured 300 forced both sides to say enough was enough. Power sharing came about as a way to reconcile the two communities and give each an equal voice in the affairs of Northern Ireland. But the tensions have always been there, and Brexit hasn't helped. The extreme DUP and Sinn Féin have overtaken the moderate parties of the Unionist UUP and the Nationalist SDLP. LGBT rights, a particular environmental programme backed by the DUP, and disagreements on how to deal with the legacy of the Troubles have been the major sticking points, and with the uncertainty of Brexit looming, the remaining paramilitary figures like Dee Stitt and Dee Fennell have been increasing the hostile rhetoric around the border issue, and the border is the biggest sticking point in a part of the UK that voted overwhelmingly to remain. Ireland has an open border. If I were to stand, for example, in County Fermanagh and walk south across the border to County Monaghan, the only noticeable difference would be prices change from pounds to euros, bilingual place names and metric distance signs would start to appear. The idea was so that it would feel like one country on the ground, but politically would remain a separate entity. It was a compromise that was meant to end any feeling of detachment from the south for Catholics and any sense of political encroachment into the north for Protestants. But Brexit has essentially put a needle in Ireland's balloon and left it with three options. An open border that leaves Ireland in the customs union but provides a backdoor to Britain. This is untenable to most Brexiteers but favourable to the Northern Irish. The second is frictionless. Open in terms of travel but patrolled by cameras and spot checks on goods vehicles. This is opposed by nationalists who see it as a subtle violation of the spirit of the original Good Friday border agreement. The third is a border down the Irish Sea. This is untenable to unionists who see no reason for a barrier to separate them from another part of their own country. So the government has broken down, the spectre of violence still looms, and communities are divided as ever. And here is what the political establishment is saying now.
The DUP leader says forcing parties into mandatory coalition does not produce stable government.
The fact that one party was able to plunge us into all of this election, a totally unnecessary election, Sinn Féin walking out of the executive was able to trigger that. So we may need to look at the whole system of government as to whether we can do things differently in the future.
Sinn Féin's new leader in Northern Ireland says it's too soon to consider voluntary power sharing.
I think that you have to realise that we are a society coming out of conflict. We can only be in government and share power with people who are absolutely wedded to the principles of the Good Friday Agreement and who absolutely have equality at the core of everything they do.
Other parties differ on the best form of government, but agree on the need for reconciliation.
This is the leader of the moderate nationalist SDLP party, Colm Eastwood.
If we keep electing two extreme parties, two parties that don't want to work together, that can't work together, then we're going to have problem after problem after problem, and we have to take opportunities now to vote for the middle ground.
This is the leader of the moderate Ulster Unionist Party, Mike Nesbitt.
I think next time there is a partnership in Stormont Castle, the seat of power of the executive, it has to be between two parties who are there, not because the law says they have to share, but because they want to share.
This is the leader of the non-sectarian Liberal Alliance Party, Naomi Long.
I actually think the form of devolution that we have doesn't actually encourage people to cooperate, to work together. Consociationalism in the very rigid form that we have actually encourages people to retreat into their trenches at every election.
But there is hope. The young people of Northern Ireland who grew up in the last 20 years are more socially liberal, more likely to question the sectarian divide, and the changes south the border have given a more favourable opinion of the Republic in the last few years. If the Brexit border issue results in a border poll, the fears of years gone by of Northern Ireland being incorporated into a poor agricultural conservative Catholic state to the south is lessening. As the Republic becomes more secular, economic issues are predicted to take precedence over identity if the question arises over a united Ireland. For Protestants, the fear that they will never have a place in Dublin could be a non-issue if Rome continues to lose its grip that it has held for decades in the Doyle. This is a challenging age for Northern Ireland. Belfast and Derry Londonderry are still littered with painted curbs and murals marking sectarian identity, but the young look set to weaken those barriers. Ireland is not the colonial story of New Zealand or Australia. The lines are marked by religion over ethnicity, but if religion becomes less of a factor in both Dublin and Belfast, it means that the future of a post-Brexit Northern Ireland will hang on one question. Would people be better off financially, socially, and politically if politicians legislated from Dublin instead of Stormont or Westminster?
Irirangi Pōhō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.